Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, soon to be Liberty State, Spokane Valley, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. It is about not ending in prayer, but moving to action. And it is really, truly about, really, deeply about God making us alive together with Christ and raising us up with him and seating us with him in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. Now, I talked on Tuesday a little bit about Christian duty. I want to talk today about something that we all can face. We all can struggle with. And that is if we don't realize that we abide in Christ, Christ abides in us, and that through that everything is at the foot of Christ, then we can succumb to fear. We can succumb to people whispering in our ear, oh, don't do that. You might be called divisive. Don't do that. You might be called names and shunned and ridiculed. And the problem is that truly all fear, except for the fear of the Lord, is rooted and a lack of trust in God. And there is no question about that across the board. Now, if you have a sense of fear about something and say, okay, Lord, I'm going to set that aside, remove that from me. What do you want me to do? I'll do whatever you want me to do. That's how you can overcome fear. Lord, remove my motivations. Remove anything I might be superimposing on the situation. And Lord, give me strength. Help increase my belief. Help me draw close to you so that I trust you fully. Now, that said, Father, whatever you want me to do, if you want me to go, I will go. If you don't want me to go, I won't go. That's how you deal with those situations, because it removes the fear from the situation and, again, puts it squarely at the foot of the cross in your relationship with God and with, with most situations, that's all that's needed. Jesus Christ will work in that situation if you're that humble. And I'm seeing in America right now, things are scary. It's scary proposition that you might lose your job. It's a scary proposition that you might be ridiculed and called names online. It's a scary proposition that the mainstream media might outright lie about you, like the Socialist Review did the other week, saying that I endorsed somebody I didn't. And then, not really responding, even though we asked for a retraction. And, everybody sees the first thing. They don't see the retraction, right? And that's the type of environment we live in. It's scary. If you are not abiding in Christ and Christ is abiding in you, if he's abiding in you and you're abiding in him, that stuff should be easily dealt with. Doesn't mean you don't go through those motions. But courage is moving forward in spite of fear and trusting the Lord. And I think that if we as Christians realized that if we got out beyond the four walls of the church, in fact, that's what our duty is, that things would be dramatically different in this country. I hear a lot of times, people are arguing that we shouldn't talk about politics. Christians shouldn't be involved in politics. Christians shouldn't do this or Christians shouldn't do that. That's exactly what Christians should be doing. Christians should be living out their faith beyond the four walls of the church. And that's the question for all of us. Have we been down on the street ministering to the homeless, praying with them, praying for healing for them, deliverance from alcoholism and drug addiction? Have we been down to the orphanages? Have we been helping the widow? Have we been going over to our neighbor's house and helping them out with their yard work or chopping wood or doing all these other things? Have we been doing that as Christians? Oh, Matt, you don't understand how busy I am. Believe me, I do. 16-hour days for months on end. Yeah, I know what that's like. But that's not what we were called to do, to make excuses. We were called to go out and serve and live our Christianity out beyond the four walls of the church. And one of the greatest things that we're doing today as Christians that shows that we don't really trust the Lord is compromise when we are confronted and not speak up because we're afraid of X. We're afraid we're going to lose our job. We're afraid we're going to be ridiculed. We're afraid. That is operating out of fear. That's not Christianity. It's just not. And I hear this all the time. I hear it from pastors, hear it from parishioners, hear it from colleagues in the legislature, hear it from business owners and everybody. And look, it is a natural thing to be afraid and to have to face fear. Those are all things that we have to deal with as human beings, but we don't compromise on that. In fact, I would argue that our compromise based on fear is why we are at where we're at in America today. That we have said, it's better just to stay silent. And we have self-censored. We have self-censored the gospel of Jesus Christ. We have self-censored the confrontation in love that we should have been doing with our brothers and sisters in Christ. Now, don't mistake that. I'm not talking about the people who have the so-called gift of judgment and they go around saying, you did that wrong, you did that wrong. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the gentle restoring of our brothers and sisters in Christ. I'm talking about the gentle restoration of people that might have gone off the path a little bit through encouragement and truth in love. And we've self-censored on that. We've self-censored in the political arena. And I've heard people say that we never talk politics and religion. Those are the only two things that we should be really talking about. Our relationship with the Lord, religion, and our relationship with each other, politics. This idea that the animating contest of life should not be so animating, that we should just sit back and let it happen. It'd be a little easier not to say anything to that person. Be a little easier not to go there. Be a little easier not to listen to that still small voice that says, hey, why don't you go over there and pray for that person on the street corner? And pray with them. Or welcome your new neighbor to the neighborhood with a gift and open arms. Or, what's God calling you to do today? What's God calling you to do this week? And are you listening? And are you acting courageously? And that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, Israel, a lot of stuff again happening over there. The opening of the United States Embassy on Monday in Jerusalem. Now Erdogan in Turkey abusing Israel. And this is at the same time that the Turkish lira is tanking, okay? So there's the context. But essentially, Turkey calling Israel a terrorist state, looks like Turkey might be imposing some sort of diplomatic punishments as well. Palestinians trying to storm the border. The Israelis fight them back. But of course, it's Israel's fault. How ridiculous is that? How ridiculous is that? The Palestinians stormed the border. They initiated. Israel self-defense, and all of a sudden, it's their fault, of course, right? Well, they set the conditions by this thing. No! The United States has the right to put an embassy anywhere it wants to in the world. That is its right as a sovereign country. It's our right as a sovereign country. Unbelievable. Unbelievable that we even still have, there are still people out there that have such an anti-Semitic feeling. And it comes out, and it's not to say don't be objective and understand that there might be globalist forces at work in Israel and in the United States for that matter. It's understanding that a sovereign country putting an embassy in a certain place does not give somebody the right for violent confrontation. And oh, by the way, if they do the violent confrontation, does it mean that the country's, you know, other country's supposed to just sit back and let it happen? It's a ridiculous notion. And it's interesting how hypocritical I hear some of these people out there talking about this issue. Because when it comes to the Second Amendment, they're totally right on it. But they don't understand how that translates to a foreign country. Come on. All right, also on the international front and in Israel, it looks like the Russians are going to be sending 1,000 rocket launchers to Assad, employing caliber cruise missiles offshore. And this is in addition to all of the anti-aircraft weaponry that Russia is sending as well. So a lot happening there, and you know, this is not going to go away as a flashpoint. I hope everybody realizes that. All right. Let's move next now to peace talks in Korea again. I think it's June 12th, the date set for the meeting in Singapore with Donald Trump. Korea kind of doing some posturing right now, North Korea. The three hostages did come home. But North Korea now saying that, you know, any sort of military drills between the U.S. and South Korea could jeopardize the talks. Well, this is posturing. They're going to do this. But it's interesting that they actually are going to sit down at the table. And, you know, the key question is, will Trump get meaningful concessions that are not just on paper, but that can be verified? That's the question. Some people saying no, he won't be able to do that. Some people saying yes, absolutely will. I mean, it remains to be seen. The fact of the matter is, the tough rhetoric and the tough stands are indeed having an effect. I hope nobody tries to argue that point. Also on the international front, Venezuela. I mentioned it. I got to mention it again just last time for this week. Starvation and suicides up. Hyperinflation, 8,000% in 1 year. Now a refugee crisis on the Colombian border. And some of the folks are being deported back to Venezuela. So very important that we keep our eyes on that. Now I'm going to go to Syria here for a second. And I want to talk about something else that has occurred over there that I think is very, very important. But it's not, doesn't have to do with the flashpoint that's happening over there between Israel and Iran. And the fact also that, you know, we have quite a bit occurring with. And this is key. You have quite a bit occurring with asymmetric warfare. And asymmetric warfare is the idea that you can move money, stop the movement of money, cyber attacks, those types of things, as another level on the battlefield. But this doesn't have to do with that. This has to do with something that actually occurred in the Obama administration. Now, InfoWars years ago did the article on this, but it finally was proven by Fox News that indeed, under the Obama administration, this is now this is key. So people that try to message me, oh, this is a conspiracy, just get educated and read. InfoWars talked about the fact that U.S. weapons, ammunition, and equipment was going to al-Qaeda under the Obama administration. People poo-pooed it. They said it wasn't true, so it was a conspiracy theory. It is now a proven fact. Fox News coming out with this very clearly. Here's a quote as part of the article. I gave the U.S. trucks and ammunition to al-Qaeda. Now proven, Fox News, U.S. military equipment and ammunition, weapons sent to Syria, did indeed get handed over to an al-Qaeda group. The witness has been vetted. Story's been confirmed. It did happen. No one can argue it anymore. And I think another key lesson from this is that the Obama administration really did not have a coherent foreign policy, number one. Number two, did not clearly put safeguards in place to prevent this from happening. So it raises the question, was that intentional or not? And I think that's worth being investigated. Was that idea intentional or not? All right, moving on to the national front. Oh, man, this story just incenses me each time I talk about it. But the NSA doesn't, this is after Congress talks about this, doesn't ramp down collection of innocent Americans in violation of the Fourth Amendment. They triple it. They triple the seizing and collection of phone records, etc., of innocent Americans. If this was any of us as normal people, we would be charged with something, right? Prosecuted for it. And these guys are getting away with it in impunity. And I mean, this goes to everything we're going to be talking about. But, all these people that have violated the law, in the Clinton administration, Clinton Secretary of State's office, the Clinton Foundation, all the network with the FBI, Deep State, DOJ, Deep State, and these folks aren't being prosecuted? Well, maybe they will be. Which brings me to an article from WorldNet Daily. The Inspector General has referred FBI and justice officials for criminal prosecution. State Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz has found reasonable grounds for believing the FBI and Justice Department violated federal criminal law in their handling of the Clinton email investigation, according to investigative reporter Paul Sperry. I'm going to make sure to post this up on Facebook, but it looks like a first wave anyways. Answering the question, will any of these people be held accountable? We don't know yet, but this is a step at least in that direction. And just as a side comment, I mean, how long did it take for that to occur? How long? I mean, they knew a lot of this information. They did. And now it takes the State Department Inspector General to get involved. And you know what's interesting about that? I bet you he's probably receiving some blowback from this. I've detailed on the show some of the things. Handling of the Bundy Ranch situation, for example, DOJ, FBI involved there. BLM involved. Is that situation going to be investigated to the point of referral for criminal charges? I mean, understand this. How many different situations are out there where criminal acts may have occurred, and there is very likely reasonable grounds that they did occur, or at least to prefer charges? Leaking of classified information. Putting a spy in a campaign. Eavesdropping without warrants, or eavesdropping with dubious grounds, even though a warrant may have been issued. I mean, all of this stuff, collaborating with foreign governments, even if it's indirect. I mean, all of these things, and are they going to be investigated? They need to be. They really do. But this State Department IG referring for criminal charges, I didn't even think that was going to happen. But at least this is happening. All right, in addition to that, the New York Times, okay, not a bastion of conservatism, confirms that Obama spied on Trump. Operation codename class, this is classic. Codename Crossfire Hurricane. Obtained phone records and other documents using national security letters, which is a secret type of subpoena. If you haven't ever heard of a national security letter, essentially it requires companies to hand over records. And again, no opportunity generally to confront the accuser. This is just allowing them to gather information. And this comes on the heels of the revelation that an actual spy was in the Trump campaign. I mean, spy in, spying on. This is America, where you have the law enforcement apparatus being used for political purposes. I mean, there are huge safeguards, or at least they're supposed to be there against this. Unreal. All right, also on the national front, DARPA creating something called a kill web. Now, this technology has been around for a while. I want you to understand that. But the full integration and the actual public announcement of it is new. It's called a multi-domain battlefield management program. This is coming to us from Technocracy News. And essentially creates a kill web. So, multiple levels of ways to kill whoever is in the designated target web. As a military application, you can see some benefit to it. But it does raise some questions. What about if this is used on civilians? Or aspects of it are used on American civilians? And that's the question that needs to be asked, and also the solutions that need to be talked about as far as safeguards in regards to that. Also on the national front, George Soros' right-hand man arrested for rape and human trafficking, coming to us from Your News Wire. Now, some people say, Your News Wire is not exactly accurate. Look, this has been on the Daily Mail. It's been on a whole bunch of different other publications. But the fact of the matter is that the allegation of a brutally assaulting and enslaving women in an $8 million Manhattan, quote, sex dungeon, according to court documents, I think is something we need to take seriously and we need to keep our eyes on. And is this the first of the high-level people that may be rolled up as part of some of this human trafficking rumor and allegation that has been out there? I don't know. But obviously, very concerning. And I think lending some credibility to people like QAnon. At least it seems like it. All right. Also on the national front. Actually, it's on the regional front. Excuse me. Very interesting development coming up with the Red Pill Expo. Lavoie Finicum, Dead Man Talking, in a world premiere there. And so I think that it's important for people to see that and to get the word out that that's going to be there. It's an important story that needs to be told. And, you know, some people say, why are we still talking about it? Because you had an American citizen who did not have a warrant out for their arrest, shot down on American soil. You had an FBI agent indicted, as Jeanette Finicum said on the last show, for removing evidence from the scene and allegedly lying about things. Serious stuff. And that's why. And it could be anybody. It could be any of us that believe the Constitution means what it says. Also on the regional front, Seattle employment tax. Driving people over to Eastern Washington. They call it King County fatigue. And businesses are just moving. And we'll welcome them with open arms in Spokane Valley. I know in North Idaho they already are. So just an open invitation to all the businesses in downtown Seattle that may listen to Patriot Radio. Come on over. It's about time. Look forward to having you. Also on the regional front, industrial hemp rules and a revision to those occurring. And these are proposals to have some pretty onerous fines. And this is after the legislature told the Department of Agriculture not to spend money on rulemaking, but to spend it on growing the market. And they're refusing to do that, apparently, or they're using old money to do the rulemaking. It's ridiculous. There is no hemp market in Washington State because they keep dragging their feet on this thing. Anyway, the comments are open on the Department of Ag's website, I believe until May 25th. Also, California, trying to adopt a law that would essentially ban Bibles using the Consumer Protection Act. Now, I want to say something. It's pretty scary about this. In Washington State, a local judge over on the west side of the state has tried to apply the Consumer Protection Act to political speech. This is extraordinarily dangerous because by applying the Consumer Protection Act that essentially allows treble damages, attorney's fees, and saying that speech is somehow a commercial item, which is a total distortion of the law. So understand that this is not just in California, that we're starting to see this up here. And the Consumer Protection Act being used for these kind of things is totally against what it was originally intended for, but also could be used as a weapon against conservatives. All right. Also, on the regional front, I'm going to bring up an issue that we've been talking about for a while, weather modification. I have news for you from some of our research that I want to share today. A lot going on with this. All right, number one, WAC, that's Washington Administrative Code 173.495. That's the rule regarding weather modification. There's two important points about that. First of all, there's an article that says, quote, the only weather modification permit ever issued, this is for Washington State, ever issued was for fog clearing at the Spokane International Airport in the 1980s, where dry ice was dropped from aircraft. Here's the interesting part about that. That was the only permit ever issued, according to this article that was part of this public records request release. So we went and looked, and I've researched part of this. It's just credible. I researched part of this with just kind of aghast at how blatant this is, what I'm about to tell you. But the Washington Administrative Code 173.495.040 has a list of exemptions from the permit requirement for certain weather modification that is exempt from having a permit. I want to read those off to you. Number one, all research and experiments related to weather modification control conducted within laboratories. That's exempt from a permit. Weather modification operations designed to alleviate sudden, unexpected, hazardous conditions which require expeditious, localized action. Four, colon, protection against fire, prevention of frost, dispersal of fog. Then it goes and says that also exempt field research and development by institutions of higher learning. Any person proposing to conduct these modification activities, though, must file a notification to the Department of Ecology. So we're trying to get a hold of those notifications for these are the exempted activities that have occurred in Washington State. Now, very clearly, dispersal of fog is happening at airports. They obviously admit that that has occurred. So that's one of them. One of them is protection against fire. What does that mean, protection against fire? Does that mean cloud seeding to create rain? I don't know. So we're going to continue to research this, but there's a name I want you to understand and become familiar with. It's called, quote, the Yale Framework. The Yale Framework, which includes the University of Washington. And it appears that the Yale Framework does weather modification experiments around the United States. And here is the key part of this. Okay, this is just absolutely unbelievable that we've uncovered this, and you're going to hear this first on Patriot Radio. But the Nevada Bureau of Land Management apparently was involved in weather modification that was performed in, quote, the southwestern region, which is the Mojave Desert and central Great Basin regions of Nevada, which is where the Bundy Ranch is located. Can you believe that? That we've uncovered this. So I'm going to have more information as we get it and get it confirmed, but so far, just unreal. And by the way, they dumped 40 gigabytes worth of documents on us. Almost all of it has nothing to do with weather modification, at least in any meaningful sense. So, you know, that's one of the tactics is to overwhelm with documents. But we're getting through it, and the more we find, we'll kind of draw the picture better for you. But that's a pretty startling development. All right. On the local front, Red Pill Expo coming up again, June 21st or 23rd here in Spokane, Washington, at the Convention Center. Also, this weekend, Saturday the 19th, 12 o'clock, at Matt Bauer's Church in Zilla, Washington. I believe it's Valley Covenant. We're going to be doing a 51st State presentation. So if you're in Zilla, look forward to seeing you this weekend. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us and the show. And please make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you get a chance, go to VoteShea.com and keep us on the air. Well, my guest today is a good friend, and also somebody that has been a champion, patriot of the year, if you will. Glenn Morgan is currently the executive director of the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights, also does We the Governed, worked at the Freedom Foundation from 2011 until 2015, and is one of the greatest fighters out there. And as Bill Whittle called Glenn back in 2014, quote, the ascended high master of political messaging. Glenn Morgan, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for having me on the air. Really, really appreciate it. And boy, after you build me up like that, I feel like I've got to really, really achieve something here.
The ascended high master of political messaging.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know what? Nobody would believe it except that I have a video of him actually saying that about me. And I don't consider myself an ascended high master of anything, but it was very nice of him to say that, and that was a fun day.
Yeah, indeed. It sounded like it. Well, Let's talk a little bit about what's happening in Washington. You know, we just did this public records request on weather modification, something I was told that didn't exist, you know, and here we're getting 40 gigabytes worth of documents. You've been uncovering bad acting a lot lately. Tell the listeners a little bit about that and kind of how these things operate.
Well, and actually, I like the fact you gave that example. Department of Ecology has done that to me as well when I filed records requests, where they just dump all large volumes of data on you. And most of it's unrelated, but they try to sneak in there some little things that they have to provide you, and they're hoping you just, you know, lose heart and you don't actually find it. And Department of Ecology, of course, is one of the worst actors in the state of Washington, so you'll oftentimes find them doing nefarious and sneaky things and dishonest things. So that's definitely a good place to turn over the rocks and then see what crawls away. But, you know, today, actually, Matt, I just finished yesterday filing the ballot title challenge to I-1639, which is this gun bill that the anti-gun folk have put on they're going to try to put on the ballot if they can get the signatures. And it's going to criminalize certain ways of storing firearms. It's going to prevent 18 to 21-year-old people from being able to purchase any kind of semi-automatic firearm of any kind. And what's kind of funny about it is that one of the excuses they use in their ballot proposal was that people at that age have underdeveloped, their brains just aren't developed yet. And so it's funny because it's okay to send people who are, you know, 18 years old into the military to control, you know, to fly planes and to vote, you know, and to run for office, where arguably a lot more damage can be done. But they don't want them to be able to own any semi-automatic firearms. That's the big argument. And so I did file that ballot title challenge along with, it turns out, several other groups also filed ballot title challenges. So that's going to be kind of a interesting process, as the AG, who's already come out officially in favor of this, which has never happened before. The Attorney General of Washington State came out in favor of a ballot initiative before his staff had even had a chance to write the ballot title, which was very prejudicial towards what the staff was doing. And when we see the ballot title that comes out, of course, obviously he had some kind of an influence on him. And so I'm challenging that, and I anticipate being in court sometime the next couple weeks to make that argument as to why how it needs to be changed so that it's more honest and accurate.
Well, it seems to be unethical, actually. I mean, the Attorney General is supposed to be objective. And especially when you have a ballot title where they're actually supposed to weigh in on this and do it from an objective standpoint to protect the voters and also uphold the Constitution of Washington State. And here they're getting involved ahead of time. But that seems to be par for the course for this guy.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and the problem is, even the low, you know, if you're a low level staffer and you are trying to do the right thing, he can step in and get rid of you. I mean, look at what's happened over at the Department of Licensing, where they've gotten rid of the director there for complying with federal law. You know, that's a message, and that's actually in the same building as the Attorney General's office. So, you know, the employees who work down there and have to write ballot titles, believe me, they get that message. And when Bob Ferguson goes on NPR talking about how great and wonderful this this gun initiative is, then, you know, staff gets that message, and they are going to be terrified of writing anything that could be perceived as neutral on it. They really are, you know, they get pushed into a corner, and it's, even though it's illegal, they will end up writing and have written language that makes it seem very benign, when in fact it creates whole new ways to become felons. So anyway, that was over the last 2 days. And also, by the way, I really appreciate the fact you mentioned the abuse of the Consumer Protection Act here in Washington State, because I'm one of the recipients of that abuse, where they're, you know, the other side is arguing that some robocalls I made in 2016, because they didn't like the message and they were effective at removing some terrible county commissioners in Thurston County, some candidates that we really didn't want to have in office. They're coming after, they being the plaintiffs, which are being funded by Democrats and some other groups, are coming after me and charging me with a violation of the Washington Consumer Protection Act, which, as far as I can tell, is the first time that's ever been used in a political speech, free speech sort of situation in the history of that act in our state. So that is that's a real concern, not just for me, but for anybody who wants to get involved politically. They could use that and weaponize that to go after, you know, politicians or groups or just individuals, like it is in my case, who are basically speaking truth to power or daring to question those in authority.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, too. I mean, you know, just as kind of a side comment, it's interesting that the left can't ever have their ideas challenged. They have to do this kind of stuff, just as kind of a side note. But second, California really is pushing this and essentially trying to ban Bibles. And yes, that is the implication of that law. And I think everybody needs to understand and make no mistake about that. This is the direction that they are heading. And it is a huge stretch to say that political speech is somehow commercial speech. I mean, commercial speech, the intention for that was something along the lines of Rosetta Stone, not people critiquing government officials and bureaucrats. It had nothing to do with that. And so this is a really scary development.
It is, yeah. And it's, you know, and part of it, I think, the for them, most of them, I think it's the process is the punishment. So they're not concerned if they lose ultimately in court so much. They figure that let's turn Glenn into an example, right? And we will run him through the ringer, and maybe nobody else will want to follow the example that he's, you know, that he's making out here being an activist. And I think the same is holds true for Tim Iman with the attorney general going after him for $2.1 million and a permanent lifetime ban on political activity, which is blatantly unconstitutional, but yet that they've put it in black and white. That's what they're trying to do to him. So I think that, you know, we really have some, especially in the attorney general's office, but elsewhere, bureaucracies that are feeling like even if they are aware that they're wrong and that it's unconstitutional, they believe they can probably get away with it. And so they're at least using their power that we've given them to abuse people, knowing that there's no consequences to them even if they fail.
I find it curious talking to members of the Slavic community that they quickly catch up on this and catch this idea that, hey, this is exactly what happened in the former Soviet Union. Quite literally, this is what happened, that people would be denied their ability to criticize government officials and bureaucrats. They would be punished into silence. Most folks, you know, obviously can't afford an attorney here in America. And, you know, to fight something like this is going to take tens of thousands of dollars. So they just know that the better course of action is to make an example of somebody so all the rest of those people out there self-censor. And that's the worst form of tyranny.
It absolutely is. Yeah. And I think that's why it's very important for people to stay engaged, be involved. And, you know, the more of us that there are out there being activists, the more engaged we are, the more assertive we are, and the more of us that there are, the much more, the bigger challenge they have at trying to silence us or intimidate us. And so, you know, it's not about Glenn, you know, it's not about me, it's not about Tim, it's not about us as individuals. It's about getting a lot more people to be engaged and involved like this. And I think that the more of us who start to get engaged that way, I think the less likely they are to succeed in their effort. You know, when there's only a few high-profile people, they think they can, if they just take you out, they take me out, maybe they think that that solves all their problems. But if there's more of us that keep getting engaged, I think that that just makes it a better place. And, you know, one example of that was actually one of the fellows who filed the challenge to this ballot title initiative, one of the other people. It turns out he's a guy named Joe Wilson who lives up in Whatcom County, and he had read my article about challenging the carbon tax initiative, and I wrote kind of a how-to on We the Governed on how to do a ballot title challenge, and he actually followed my instructions in that article and actually filed it himself. That's a great example of somebody who just took the initiative and got involved. And again, more people like that stepping up and doing what they can, it really starts to make a difference. And there's no way the other side, no matter how corrupt and dishonest they are, they cannot prevail when good numbers of us start to get involved. And it doesn't take everybody. It just takes a small percentage of the population to make a huge difference.
A huge difference. And I think that's the key part of this. You know, especially on issues like property rights, which you've been intimately involved in for a very long time, you know, it always seems like one property owner gets pegged and everybody else around them is like, wow, I'm glad that wasn't me. Instead of thinking, hey, if that happens to them, that might be headed my way and I need to step up right now.
That's exactly the message that we always have to think about this is that, you know, I've fought for property rights, you know, for a long time, and I'm going to continue to fight for property rights. It is highly unlikely in my county that the code enforcement people really want to come out and bother me. And mainly just because I'm obviously a nightmare for them. And so it's easier for them just to let you go. But if that isn't good enough, if they can go and hurt my neighbor, eventually they can get to me. I have to defend my neighbor. I have to defend my community. I have to defend anybody around me who's having their freedoms taken away, because if they can do it to them, they absolutely can do it to you. None of us are going to be exempt if we let this happen to other people. And that's why it's so important to recognize our freedoms, not just for ourselves, but for the rest of us, the rest of our community, and our neighbors, you know, next door, even in Seattle. I mean, you've talked about early in your show about some of the ridiculously foolish and terrible decisions they're making in the city of Seattle. That affects all of us because it spreads like a disease. And we want to stop these bad ideas wherever they are and nip them in the bud and stop them there so that there's no way they ever get to our communities. And that's the life of an activist, and that's really part of being an assertive, you know, citizenry, recognizing that if we stand up for others, then eventually by doing so, we are really able to individually protect ourselves if we can protect them.
I want to really stay on this for a second. There was something that came out of the former Soviet Union with Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and he called it it was the Solzhenitsyn question, but he called it the key question for everybody. And it was, at what point could we have done something? And anyway, his answer to that question was when they came to do it to our neighbor. And to have a guy who literally was thinking this as he was headed on the train car to the gulag, I think should be very startling and provoke us to thought here in America that if we just sit back and allow that to happen, this is not going to stop. No amount of compromise, no giving in is going to stop the leftist agenda. They're going to continue to take ground and continue to take ground and continue to take ground. And people think, oh, well, maybe they're a little misguided, you know, but this is an intentional agenda, and people really do need to know that.
They do, and it's so important. That's why it's so important for us to communicate with each other and be organized, even if it's just through loose affiliation, because when they decide that they're going to go out there and attack a rancher, you know, in Ponderay County, or a small business owner down in Clark County, or, you know, somebody who's trying to build their house out in Pacific County, their rights and freedoms being destroyed by a local government tyranny or a state agency, that should matter just as much to us as if it was our neighbor right next door, because if they can do it to them, they do eventually catch up to you. And I cannot tell you how many property owners who I have tried to work with who are in the middle of horrific situations, and they were apathetic and totally unconcerned when they saw it happen to their neighbors. And when it suddenly happened to them, they always tell me this. I just didn't realize. I thought there was just something happening over there. It was their fault. I was really glad it wasn't me. And then suddenly it was me, and there was nobody left to help me, and I didn't help them. And so that realization, when it sinks in, is you know, it's a terrible thing to have that happen. And I always just encourage people, don't be that guy or that gal who suddenly realizes that for years you ignored the damage that was being done to your neighbors or other community members, and then they finally came to you, you know, there's nobody left to help you. So, or it's a lot harder. So it's much better if you get organized early and stop it early when they're going after somebody else so that they never get around to coming after you.
That's exactly right. And I think that when people understand this, you can't help but be motivated but help to be involved. So what other things are you working on and people should be, you know, aware of that the left is doing over there in Seattle? Because I think a lot of times, too, here in Spokane, it's easy to just say, oh, that's those crazy guys in downtown Seattle, and try not to pay attention to it. The problem is that those policies and that type of experimental attitude in downtown Seattle of how to raise taxes in every conceivable way eventually makes its way over here to the east side.
Absolutely. And in fact, there you can't escape this. I mean, that's the thing. You can't run away and think that you're going to get away from it because you can move to Texas or North Idaho or, you know, rural Montana. It follows you. It might be a question of a few more years, but every bad idea, wherever it begins, it spreads like a disease. And so the things I'd be really watching for are obvious. Any of this, the restrictions on the ability to live in homes, which is really interesting in Seattle in a terrible way, that they're basically making it so your only living option is going to be living in these high-rise sort of apartments because they're doing everything they can to drive home ownership away. I just had somebody call me the other day, and they weren't in Seattle. They're outside of the Seattle area. But this lady had lived here for 40 years, bought 40 acres, and all she wanted to do, because of the increasing cost of property tax and everything, is sell 1 acre of her property so that she could continue to live out the rest of her days on her property. And there were plenty of places around where that had happened, but the King County wouldn't let her do it for 20 years. And now she's facing losing her home and property because she no longer has an asset of any kind that she can sell. And I would also be watching for what they're doing with the renters. The landlord associations have been involved, and it's easy not to be not to think that that matters. But when they're making it so that landlords can't actually do criminal background checks on people before they rent to them, it creates terrible situations where, even if you're a renter and you think, well, none of these property rights issues are going to affect me, now there's no way that your landlord could ever keep a convicted felon and somebody who's got a terrible history from being your next door neighbor in your apartment complex. Or if you're in a dorm, you know, from being able to move in right next to you there, those landlords can't even keep them out now for a penalty of $55,000 penalty if they do a background check on them. These are terribly they're horrible ideas with destructive consequences that reach far beyond what the initial bad idea was. It just creates terrible situations in a community when things like that happen. So, this whole homeless movement right now with the Poverty Inc. people who are profiting from the homeless problem in Seattle, that's spreading in the state. And this is entirely a self-created problem. You know, first you make housing very expensive and difficult to get, so you drive people out on the margins so they can't afford to live there. And then what you do is you reward the worst behavior in the community, where they can go out and shoot up drugs and become criminals, and you don't enforce the law. And next thing you know, these people are camping in backyards, they're squatting in homes, they're committing crimes with impunity, and all these things are happening. And many of these people in Seattle are waking up, which is good. They're waking up and they're suddenly realizing, wait a second, what happened to our city? And it's these policies that lead to just unbelievable consequences. Now, you and I might be able to predict that, and we've warned of this many times, but there's a lot of people who just, they have to see it for themselves, and Seattle's becoming a demonstration of how the laboratory of these, it's kind of a mini laboratory of just really poor leftist ideas, and then what happens to the community when they get implemented.
Well, Glenn, in the last couple minutes that we have left, where can people go to find out more information about everything that you're doing? And also, if you had one thing to tell people to do to get involved, what would it be?
I think there's strength in numbers. I ask everybody who is not already a member to please join CAPR, which is CAPR.US. Please join. Become a member. There's strength in numbers. The more of us that are out there, the more powerful we become and more influential we become. I also have my website, wethegovern.com, and I do write a lot of articles there about what's going on. And if you happen to be in Yakima or Ellensburg or Spokane, Tim Iman and I are actually doing a full contact activism tour around the state. In fact, I'll be speaking in Yakima tonight at 6:30 to 8:30 at the Howard Johnson, and in Ellensburg on May 21st, and in Spokane on May 22nd. And you can look up Full Contact Activism Tour. It'll give you all the information about it. And you can see us in person and come up and talk to me in person at those events as well.
For those people that are out there that say, hey, you know, my risk aversion level is not very high, and I can't think of getting involved and then maybe getting attacked or something like that, or losing something, you know, like a job or maybe getting sued. What would you tell those folks to kind of address that fear?
Well, I think one thing to point out is that we live in wonderful times. when the worst thing that can happen to me as an activist standing up for freedom and truth is that I get sued. I mean, there's been plenty of times in our history, think of our founding, when for somebody to stand up and confront evil, they were going to lose their farm and they might be killed and be in prison for life and things like that. So I find that that threat, even at the level that I'm at, is it's a joy, because that is nothing compared to what generations before us have had to face dealing with far more significant problems. And for those who don't want to be quite that much of a target, there are lots of little things you can do along the way. Support people like me, support people like Tim Eyman, find your own passion that you can do where you live, and maybe that involves research or writing or just getting involved in another group. There is power in numbers and strength in numbers, and get together with other people who are like-minded and organize. And it doesn't mean you create an empire. It just means you go and find something that you can focus on. Maybe that's Department of Ecology or something else. But if the more of us that are there involved, the much more difficulty I think the other side has in retaliation.
Glenn Morgan, Executive Director for the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights here in Washington. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio. Keep up the fight and the great work. And tell all those folks down in Yakima, everybody in Patriot Radio land says hello.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Take care. All right. I want to end the show briefly again by talking about this idea about the Consumer Protection Act being used against conservatives to stifle not just political speech, but the spreading of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and to ban Bibles. That's what they're talking about down in California. Now, they're probably compromised, and it won't be this year. Maybe it'll be next year. I don't know. But that's clearly the direction that they're going. And I think folks need to understand this. We are seeing the attempted systemic attack on conscience and on freedom of speech, conservatives. Folks, this is how tyranny gets its roots. So take it seriously. Get out there. Get involved. Live out your Christianity beyond the four walls of the church. This is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.